What's going on, everybody? We're back again. It's episode 278 of Dark Windows Podcast. My name is Kevin.
And my name is Kevin as well.
And yes. I feel like a shit in ass still.
Shit in ass.
Yeah, an ass that's been shit inside of and that's just covered with it also. I've been sick all week. It sucks. I'm kind of glad we changed our recording schedule to Saturdays because Wednesday would not have happened. I felt like dog shit this week. I'm starting to feel a little bit better, but yeah, I don't look any better. So
happened. It's all right.
Also, welcome to the final episode of the Dark Windows Podcast before World War III. So, because as of right now, nothing's hit Israel from Iran. So
we're
getting there.
As we know.
Yeah.
But Israel, as Iran says, it's, you know, nothing else is going to happen from them.
Yeah, sure. Let's see. Well, I mean, what? How dare they attack Israel when Joe Biden told them, and I quote, don't. it's a strong statesman and a man with really, really good international relationship skills. It's just don't.
True.
You know.
So this week.
Just so happens to be an election year, too, and it's hard to get rid of a president if there's a war. But I think we take our vitamins and pray real hard, we can make it happen.
It's true. So this week, we're on.
This is round two.
Round two of the semifinals. No.
Round two. Round two would be the quarters, yes.
Yes, quarterfinals. We have. Who the hell was it that was
We've got.
Ilsa Koch, and then Muhammad Farah Adid.
You put way too much like respect on that guy's name. You could have just called him that shitbag from Somalia.
Well, I could have.
You probably should have. Like, he fucking sucks, dude. I'm so glad. I'll be so glad when we get done talking about him, so we don't have to talk about him anymore.
Yeah, and if this is a spoiler, because if you're not a Patreon,
patreon.com/darkwindowspodcast
subscriber. You will have missed out, or if you don't want to miss out on it, don't listen to this, you know, stop this episode right now, go over to Patreon.
$5 a month gets you access to all of our bonus episodes.
Yes. And including this week's episode, which we released the day after recording this.
Yes. Patreon goes up on Sundays.
Yes.
Regular episodes, go up on Thursdays for now. That might switch to Wednesdays with our new schedule though.
So. We are for that one, for this week's Patreon, we're going to talk about an asshole, actually a combination of assholes from pre-Adid.
Two interlocked assholes, like if you had like three more, you could make the Olympic symbol out of assholes.
I guess.
Little fried calamari rings. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, they might make Adid look like a pussy. You know, because of what they did, they were pretty bad.
I mean, he was not good.
No, but they were just as bad, and they weren't backed by the U.S.
Well, here's the thing. I want to say this without it sounding awful. So I guess the best way to do it would just be to come out and say it. Nobody gives a fuck about Africa, and that's why all these, like, evil motherfuckers happen in Africa.
Okay.
We only give a fuck about important parts of Africa.
They didn't give a fuck about Africa during the Patreon episode.
Okay.
This episode, we know they gave a fuck about, okay? Because I think what Patreon is a preamble to this.
And
so
let's do another four-part preamble. If you're this far and you know who this guy is, but you want to learn more about what happened, you should go back and listen to our episode. I believe it was 200 series where we did a four-parter on Operation Gothic Serpent, which was what Black Hawk Down is based on.
Or you listen to most of this and then go listen to
Black Hawk Down and this in some order.
Or if you're a Patreon subscriber, you listen to Patreon, then go listen to this episode, and then Black Hawk Down.
Okay. Then when you're all done with that, go listen to the Sean Ryan show, the three-part that he did with Tom Satterley, and try to tell me that you are a grown man and didn't cry during any of that, because I will call you a fucking liar, because I did.
Didn't see it, so.
Oh, dude. Oh, man.
I haven't seen it.
I didn't watch it. I listened to it, though. So he was one of the guys that obviously was, you know, he was a Delta guy that went in during everything.
Yep.
And when he gets back to base finally, because he was one of the Delta guys that was on the... That's dead. He was one of the few Delta guys that didn't get into a Humvee for the Mogadishu Mile. He ran out telling stories about... Yeah, it's like in the movie, they just run out. It's like, no, we were getting fucking shot at the whole way. I'm stopping and picking up magazines that have like 3 or 5 rounds in them, throwing them in my rifle, throwing ammo at people, grabbing another fucking magazine with like 3 or 4 rounds in it off the ground. And he's like, then we get back and the Delta Hooch was directly across like diagonal from, from the med bay. And he's like, I stood there and I was counting boots and there was way too many black Oakley boots, which is what the Delta guys wore. And, listening to a grown man weep made me fucking super sad.
Huh.
I had a really, really hard time with it.
I'll have to watch that.
And then, like, that's not even, like, the shit that happened to him in Somalia is awful, yes. That's not even, like, the tip of the iceberg for the rest of the shit that this guy's been through, you know? And, you feel for him.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's a man with a broken brain that's trying his best to fix it.
Nice. Okay.
Speaking of people with broken brains, let's talk about this fucking asshole.
Are we going to talk about him, or do we want to recap?
New guy first.
Okay.
Like we did last time.
All right. Perfect. I didn't know if that's we were going to stick with that, or...
Then once we get to where we're repeating, we'll just rock, paper, scissors to see who gets to go first on that one.
Okay. So, Muhammad Farah Adid, born December 15th, 1943. He was educated in Italy and in Russia. He would study at the Frunze Military Academy in Moscow. He would serve in the Italian colonial police in the 1950s.
Where would that have been? I was thinking Somalia was under.
He was in Italy.
Okay.
I wasn't
sure if Italy had interest elsewhere at the time or not. Okay.
He would then join after getting out of the police. He would leave that, and then he would go back to Somalia, and he would join the Somali National Army.
Yeah.
In 1969, he would be one of many officers that would be held in and imprisoned by the dictator of Somalia, Siad Barre. And we are going to discuss. Spoiler alert, we are going to discuss Siad Barre for Patreon.
Okay, so that's why the name sounds familiar, because when we talked about the, we did the Black Hawk Down episode, his name came up. Very, very brief overview of what he did. So I'm sure if you went into some graphic detail, we're going to have a...
Oh, yeah.
Because what I was like, when we covered that, I basically just went through like, this is who he is, this is kind of what he did, and, you know, then he was gone. You know? Yeah. So... I'm kind of pumped to get into that, too.
So, not just him, though. His son-in-law.
Mm. Shit birds of a feather.
They are intertwined. Because of Siad, this guy, you know, and what he did was, you know, result of what he... We'll get into it in the Patreon.
They're a rat king of scumbags.
Something like that. And one of them actually is still alive.
Have you ever seen a rat king? Yeah. They're fucking gross. That's what,
So he would be released from prison in 1975.
That's unfortunate.
He would then fight in Ethiopia from 1977 to 1978. He was a general at the time of that. Then 1979 rolls around and... What do you do, you know, when you want to feel things out? You get a little closer to that dictator, that asshole.
Of course.
That threw you into prison.
Of course.
And no
hard feelings, buddy.
Yeah.
You know?
Because of his...
I'd have done the same thing.
Because of his, his good deeds in Ethiopia, Siad would appoint him to the parliament.
A good call.
And well, this was a little bit of a backlash on Syed's part because he would because of, you know, his work in Parliament, he would then become the ambassador to India. Mm. And this was all because Syed perceived Adid as a threat.
And I mean,
and a political threat.
Spoiler alert, I'm not sure if you're going to talk about this or not, but Muslims and Indians, usually not buddies.
No.
So, oh, yeah, by the way, he's a Muslim, so.
Who?
Adid.
Yeah, they're both are.
That's what I'm saying. But like I said, you know, Muslims and Indians are like water and oil.
Yeah, but he's an ambassador to India.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
So, and Adid became the leader of the powerful United Somali Congress during the civil war against Syed's regime in 1991. Mm-hmm. But there's a civil war.
Oh, yeah.
And Syed is ousted from power, and there's this kind of hole that gets left.
I think the scientific term is like power vacuum.
There's yeah, there's a hole.
Yeah.
And Adid would fill one of these gaps, this hole. And another guy would fill the other hole.
Mm.
So we have a north-south situation.
Yes.
And then another civil war kind of breaks out.
Historically, two people from the same country fighting for north and south, that's never happened before.
No.
I can't think of one example of that.
No.
You know?
No, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
It's weird.
All I can tell you is... all of these guys involved with this civil war probably wouldn't have been fighting in our civil war, if you know what I mean.
The second kind of civil war breaks out a little bit, and the people of Somalia are the victim, real victims of this.
Of course, the civilians are always the victim in the civil war,
because to kind of see basically who has the bigger dick.
Yeah.
You know, there kind of becomes a measuring contest there.
Yes. Somewhat of a pissing contest.
Yeah. They began to take away food and water and all this stuff, which resulted in Somalis beginning to starve and die because these two pricks wanted to take everything for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The number of people is estimated at around 1 million.
Yeah.
Not dying from you know, being shot in the head or poisoned or gassed or anything like that. No, they're being starved to death.
Yep. And honestly, 1 million is probably a conservative number. It was probably more than that.
No, the estimation from the source I got was a very reliable source said the estimation's at 1 million.
Jesus.
Not
like that makes it any better, you know?
No. And Adid was sent in from... So aides were actually sent in from the UN and France and the U.S.
Yeah, they were.
This was our first wave. And if you go back to the... At this point...
Sorry.
Kind of like this point right here, I think we might overlap a little bit with Black Hawk Down episode.
This would have been where the Marines went in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
including
Adid's son actually does go in, his eldest.
Mm-hmm.
Because he speaks the language. Well, these shipments would that were being sent in before the Marines get sent in. This is only when the blue hats are in there.
Yeah.
The shipments would actually be ambushed by Adid's men along with other warlord's men. So the other guy, you know, if they're coming from different direction, being dropped in, well, they'd take it over.
This is the Call of Duty war zone. Like there's a shipment drop and you got to get there and defend it kind of thing. And except instead of getting cool guns, it's like fucking rice and flour.
Now, what made this kind of interesting, because I don't remember actually talking about this during our Black Hawk Down episode, was that originally the people protecting the UN forces, UN peacekeepers, or aid relief people.
Yeah.
Were basically what am I trying to say? Militants, maybe, I guess would be the word. Or not even that, like people for hire, you know.
Mercenaries,
I guess.
Okay.
Who would be sent in to help them or guard them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was these same dickheads, because they knew where things were.
Yep.
They would be ambushing these things, these caches.
Yeah, I don't think we got into that at all, to be honest.
And people actually were being gunned down by Mad Maxes or technical cars, which yep. are off-road pickups with rear platforms designed to support a heavy machine gun operated by four or five men.
Okay.
So if you stop here, go to Black Hawk Down episode, the movie, and you see at the very beginning.
Yeah, watch the first 5 minutes. You'll see a technical.
Yeah, that's a technical.
Or watch the rest of the movie. Any vehicle that rolls up is a technical.
Yeah. but you see particularly that very first portion where there's a Black Hawk that's being flown over, and they're like, you know, we kind of like see it, and they're like, you know, do you engage? No, you know, they're not shooting at you. Don't engage. Well, all of a sudden they open up on, there's a shipment of supplies.
Yeah.
And people kind of rush it.
Cause that was when the Rangers hungry. Wanted to fucking drop the dudes on the truck so that these people could get the food.
Yeah. Well, they're like, nope, don't do it. And they get opened up on, well, it's basically what happened.
Yeah.
This shit was actually previous to that point, because at that point, was the second go around of us going in.
Unfortunately, it was probably something that happened all the time, though.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads me into something that I think maybe as a Patreon episode, maybe for next week, now that you mentioned technicals, maybe next week I'll do the Toyota Wars. You know anything about the Toyota Wars?
Yeah.
Okay. So. Yeah, we'll do the Toyota Wars next week.
So when the MSF team arrived, there in June of 1992, they found a scene from Armageddon. Violence and arms were everywhere.
Yeah.
The surrounding villages were devastated. Thousands of emaciated children were packed into makeshift shelters, and survivors were stifling under the constant threat of looting. A press campaign on the theft of supplies by armed bands culminating in an announcement by the UN General Secretary that 80% of these supplies was being looted. It's no coincidence that this figure was released just days before the announcement of the U.S. intervention.
Yep.
What we can say in response to this fanciful statement, which meant in effect that all aid sent to Somalia ended up in lining the pockets of war profiteers and local thugs.
Yep. Warlords.
Yep. Hijackings were occurring, of course, as in all situations and all kinds, but it is estimated that the thefts amounted to 30 to 40% of food aid in the worst regions of the country.
Yeah.
And half of that amounted elsewhere.
And this wasn't dropping in like 5 gallon totes of food. These are fucking like 4 or 5 ton crates that are getting shoved off the back of planes or whatever. And, you know,
when the UN released the 80% figure, the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, which was supplying food directly to 2 million people, estimated that it was losing about 10% of its relief supplies to plundering. As we all know, that our episode on Black Hawk Down incident, troops were sent in and were making a difference, and things kind of looked better, so they got pulled out.
Yep.
Okay. And this is where Adid's son, his eldest son, because at this point, Adid's, one of his wives, had actually left Somalia, and she went to Canada, became a citizen eventually. And then he would come down to the United States and become a citizen down here, yep. which then he would then join the military, got sent over here, over there to basically because he could speak the language.
Yep. Then he came back and got an education on the GI Bill, actually.
Yep. And then so he then comes back and full circle. He then goes back to Somalia, becomes president
mm-hmm.
later on.
Quote unquote president.
No, he gets he becomes president. Good things happen, I guess.
Yeah. I guess maybe he's not as much of a scumbag as his father.
No.
And those are big shoes to fill, though.
Because he became president while he was still here. They nominated him to be president. And then he didn't do anything about it until, you know, later, like a little bit later.
So that's weird that they can elect someone who's technically a foreign citizen president.
I don't know.
I mean, if that's the case, then, like, we gotta, I don't know, hijack one of those dudes from South America or that guy that's running against fucking Trudeau.
Yeah.
If he doesn't win, because I kind of like him, mm-hmm. you know.
So, as we all know, those, like I said, those troops got pulled out. Well, things look better because of it, you know, they're pulled out. The number of hijackings would go up.
Yep.
And essentially, troops had to come back in.
Yeah, because that's what happens is when you have law and order that are now finally in place because you have military there, and then you just yank them out, it creates, again, a power vacuum. Then everything goes to shit. And then it does the same thing in 2021-ish when you do that in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
It's fucking wild how you wouldn't think that the same thing could happen twice. You know?
It happened more than once because then it happened in Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely did. And so, it will eventually happen in another fucking shithole Middle Eastern country after this war's over. You know?
So
it is what it is, I guess. But
Adid, being a smart man, knew what he had to do to win the people. And what he knew he had to do to get them onto his side was tell them that the U.S. was there to put Sayyid back into power. And this worked because the people wanted to fight.
Yep. Even though what we were there to do was put food in their bellies.
Yeah. In early June, 23. Now, let me stop. Hold on. We go back. If you, at this point, because I say they started a fight because of putting Sayyid back in power.
Mm-hmm.
If you're wondering why that is, I hate to say it. I'm not going to tell you why. You have to go to Patreon to check that out.
Because that's part of his story.
Yeah. They didn't like him. So
obviously. I mean, he was a dictator, correct?
And yeah. In early June, 23 Pakistani blue helmets were killed in a series of engagements, followed by retaliatory strikes that cost the lives of 34 Somalis.
I mean, that's a good start for fucking UN workers, but
yep.
I mean, whoops.
After having been the UN's preferred contact to the point where all change in political scene was blocked, Muhammad Farah Adid was suddenly accused of crimes against humanity and declared guilty of the deaths of 300,000 people. A reward of $25,000 was offered for the information leading to his capture, and the manhunt began under the mocking gaze of other faction leaders who saw their main rival forced to live more or less in hiding. So after this point is actually when the events of Black Hawk Down would happen, which resulted in the deaths of 18 U.S. soldiers and many more wounded. Adid would declare himself president of Somalia, but this would mean he lost support from his allies.
Mm-hmm.
In 1986, he would actually be wounded while fighting against Osman Ali Ato's forces, and he would then so he's wounded in the leg. And while having surgery to repair said leg, he has a heart attack.
Mm.
And he dies.
That's unfortunate.
On the table. Yeah. I know. It sucks. I'm just
heartbroken.
Heartbroken.
Yeah.
So
there was always the rumor that he had one of them, you know, Navy SEAL heart attacks also, you know, that he was somewhere and he had a heart attack that may or may not have been induced by
lead
bullets.
Yeah, no, he died from that.
Had one of them 10 millimeter heart attacks.
Yeah.
MMP5 heart attacks, you know.
Unfortunately, he dies.
Yeah, he got to die like relatively peacefully, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, while he's dead, there's another guy that's an asshole that's still alive that on the Patreon episode we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Who's still operating and who operated during the whole Black Hawk down
another
thing.
Like warlord?
No.
Oh.
Son-in-law of Syed.
Okay.
So yeah.
Doesn't make him any less of a piece of shit, but
no, they're all pieces of shit.
Because I know there was from listening to the Tom Satterly thing, he said when you were in Mogadishu, there were certain areas where if you rolled through there in a Humvee, you're totally fine. If you take, you know, a right under the next street, you're okay on one side of the road, but not the other. Because it just kind of broke down by the territory that the war. It's like fucking gangs. It's like everybody has their territory. But he's like, there was definitely warlords that, you know, when we rolled through, there was people out in the streets, like, shaking our hands and shit and waving at us and stuff.
Yep.
Then you'd take a right-hand turn, and people are throwing rocks and shit at your Humvees, you know. And then you take another left, and you end up, you're still in the same neighborhood, but you're okay now because you're on a different street.
Yeah.
Like, that's so fucking crazy.
Yes.
You know, and Somalia doesn't look anything like the movie because that shit was shot in Morocco. Like, the tallest building in Mogadishu was like a 4-story warehouse.
Yeah.
You know?
So, this has come to the point now where I make my case of why he should move on. Honestly, my case is that, well, he was one of the main reasons why a million and a half, we'll call it a million and a half, maybe a little bit more, people ended up actually dying.
Yeah.
Because he killed, you know, because they were shooting their own people.
Mm-hmm.
So the 300, the half a million was because he was an asshole and wanted to just would have technicals roll up and just, you know, take them out. You know, we don't know how many of those actually happened.
Probably a fair number, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to get to this half a million mark. And then a million, not by his own hand, but I guess by his own hand, because he just, you know, let him starve.
Yep.
And didn't feed him because he wanted to take all the food himself.
Yeah.
That, I mean, to me, puts you, you know, as a clear front runner for this episode as the top dog of asshole.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, these guys were stiff competition, though.
So, I mean, to me, for me, that kind of, you know, puts him to that that extent as, you know, the guy who was just an all-around asshole that, you know, that kind of died, you know, at a just a nice and easy way.
Let's also not forget the Italians, Pakistanis, the Indonesians. I think they're Indonesian or Singapore or something like that. And Americans that were all
and French
that all were killed just trying to help, trying to get people food.
That's why I said, you know, that's why I raised the number from 300 to 500.
I'll tell you what, though.
I'm guessing, you know, at least I said 300,000, but I'm guaranteed the number was closer to 500 that they had killed.
But I do know that one of the numbers that they threw out for the whole Black Hawk Down thing was like, I want to say it was like 30 American servicemen killed or somewhere in that neighborhood. Another fucking couple hundred wounded. But
yeah,
on the Somali side, just, and again, it's hard to put a number into perspective because you don't necessarily know I mean, these guys that went in, like, the U.S. guys that went in were basically the best of what we have to offer on the Army's half of things. Also some Navy SEALs and also some bad motherfuckers from the Air Force. These aren't dudes that are getting nervous and shooting at shadows. These guys are only shooting people with guns, okay?
Yeah.
They, like, the estimate there was, like, 600 to 800 Somalis killed by a very small force of U.S. troops that went in there. Yep. And, yeah, I mean, you don't like to say, well, we did good, because we didn't. We didn't do good because we lost a lot of dudes for no fucking reason.
I mean, so, you know, if you want to add that in, so we're going to put it at 2.1 million.
Yeah, something like that.
Because
yeah.
of his actions of saying, hey, you know, they're going to bring back a guy that you all hate.
Yeah, which was completely not fucking true.
It was no, that they weren't going to bring him back. They, no. I mean, they could have.
Could have, but they weren't going to.
No, probably not, but...
We could have found some other asshole to stick in there as a dictator instead.
We learned from our mistake.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Probably, maybe. Who knows?
I won't go too far into it, because I'll not a spoiler.
Listen, if we put you in power, you have one shot, one opportunity. Like the rest of the words from that Eminem song. You fuck up, we get rid of you. We're not going to put you back in. Like,
yeah.
Look at Cuba. You know, the guy that was there before Castro, who was, I guess, an asshole from what I've read. We put him there. He had one shot. He didn't do great. So then they're like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. We didn't put Castro there, but when he came to power, we're like, eh. And then like 25 minutes later, we're like, no.
No.
Don't like this.
So, yeah, so essentially that's my half. So I guess we'll take a break and we'll come back and
yeah.
we'll let you, you know, regurgitate a little bit on Ilsa Koch.
I'm just going to kind of hit some, I'm not going to go all the way back through her backstory, but I'm going to pick up in about, I don't know, 1936 and go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we're back. Let's regurgitate a little bit on Ilsa Koch for everybody that, you know. It's been a minute since
yeah,
we've discussed
it has been a minute. Yes, yeah, it's been a few weeks. So Ilsa Koch, obviously a German, if you couldn't guess by the last name. She got her last name from her husband, Karl Otto Koch, who was, you know, he was in a German military. He was, you know, one of them SS fellas,
mm-hmm.
you know, like he gets to go to all the cool Nazi parties in high school. Mm. He's got the card and everything. Yeah. Do you know who I am? I'm a member, motherfucker. He's got his little gold card. Nah, it's probably white. It's probably white.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe.
Or it was gold from the tooth plating. Yeah. Ooh, man. I mean, ooh. Do you think the SS could have recycled teeth for cards?
Possibly.
Then to run them through the IBM machines to have them stamped?
Probably.
Because, like, yeah, you're welcome for that one, I guess, too, you know. Because IBM was the one that was in charge of all the numbering for Jews.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. One of them good old American companies, you know.
Hey.
Doing the Lord's work by numbering people like cattle. Anyway, so this piece of shit, he was a colonel in the SS, and he was the commandant of the Sachsenhausen concentration camp. This is, again, one of the bigger ones. This is about 20 miles from Berlin. So it's like, you know, this is the one that you can't really do anything stupid at.
Yeah.
Because you're right next to the principal's office.
Yeah.
So you got to, like, keep your shit together and, you know. They got their first, like, real big influx of prisoners at Sachsenhausen. right after Kristallnacht, which was in November of 1938, which we'll talk about that in full at some point. Not a good time to be a Jew.
Not a good night.
But, I mean, historically, there hasn't been a lot of good times for them, you know?
No.
Yeah, all the way back to, like, you know, Egypt and shit. You know. And then the Romans, and then the Nazis, and then, like, I guess now, but... I mean, Hollywood's pretty cool. Like, they got it going there.
True.
Bagels? Nobody makes a better bagel than Jews. 100%.
Bagel.
No, they're bagels. We're not in fucking Wisconsin, asshole.
Bagel.
Bagel, you fucking prick. Of this first influx was about 10,000 Jews that were rounded up from Germany. Berlin, Hamburg, Mecklenburg, Pomerania, and they're all sent to Sachsenhausen. Right about immediately when they get off the trains, about 450 of them are murdered immediately. Just because, you know. It's like you go to a baseball game. First 400 people get a free hot dog. You know, first 500 people here just get thrown in a trench and shot with a machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So make sure you're nice and early so you can see batting practice. They were letting people that could find passage to other countries that were eligible, like, you know, that passports had someone that lived there, you can go. That's fine. And a lot of them ended up in Poland. And then they're like, wait a minute, we've seen you before. Hop on the bus. So the camp's inmate population fluctuated from about 11,000 to 48,000 during the war. Of the roughly 200,000 people that passed through Sachsenhausen, about 100,000 of them were killed by executions, overwork, overworking at armament factories. So they're making munitions to be used against their own people, which is kind of fucking sad. And the rest of them that weren't worked to death were sent to the gas chambers when those were opened up in 1943. That was used by special orders, though, for the gas chamber, which... dismissive wank gesture there.
Yeah.
1937, the Cokes, whatever, are transferred to Buchenwald. And the iron sign over the gate, because apparently that was a thing, like if you had a big concentration camp, you had to have a fucking, you know, a school motto or some shit. And theirs was Jedim Dasin, which means to each his own. This is intended as a message that everyone gets what they deserve, basically. If you happen to, you know, not do Christmas, but you do the 8 days in December thing, and you can't turn light switches on Saturdays and stuff, I guess you get what you deserve. That's where they were going with this, you know.
I wouldn't say to each their own means that, but okay, I'll go with it.
It was kind of how it was taken by people, you know. So she jumps at the opportunity to become in hubby's work, and over the next few years gains a pretty nasty reputation as being one of the most ferocious people at the camp in all of Buchenwald, which is saying something, you know.
It's true.
When other Nazis look at you and go, ugh, you're not a good person. And for some reason, the two female Nazis that we've covered so far seem to be on a different level of brutality from the men.
True.
Because the guys were just like, fuck them and killed them. Where the women would, like, they were just different.
They would fuck them, then
yeah,
because
we had fucking Irma Grease, who was having sex with anything with a pulse, and then being like, oh, they raped me. And then having a whole building full of people executed, or throwing potato skins out on the ground as trash, and then watching from a window as anybody that crawled up to it and started taking them and having them fucking picked out and killed. Like, what a cunt, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, we don't use the C word lightly, but she's a cunt.
It's definitely a hard C.
Yeah. Hard UNT also.
Yes. Soft about it.
I think I would put that in all caps.
All
capitals with, like, neon flashing.
Exclamation
cunt with a point,
points.
Like an arrow pointing at her grave.
There's, like, four exclamations, I think, at least.
Yeah, she's a miserable piece of shit.
Yeah.
So, her first order of business was using money that was acquired from the prisoners.
There's some big air quotes there.
Acquired. To construct a $62,500 indoor sports arena where she could ride her horses. So that translates to about $1 million today in that money. So she had to have an indoor arena for her horses, you know, because you got to have a hobby. You know, you can't just work all day.
Of course.
She often took her pastime outside of the arena and right into the camp itself, where she would harass prisoners until they looked at her, and at which point, when they looked at her, she would smack them across the face, the back, wherever she could get them, with a riding crop, which I don't know if you've ever picked up a riding crop. Those fuckers are stiff. Like,
yes.
That's not like getting snapped with a towel. That's like getting hit with a leather-wrapped chunk of wood.
Yeah,
they suck. And then they got that little tab at the end where it's like got a gap in it, which, you know, you get a little bit of snap action with that. They're not great. I don't know why people would use them on fucking horses, but I mean, I guess horses aren't people. You know, they're built different. They don't feel pain the same way as us.
No.
Like when you see a farmer punch a cow in the ass and like people get pissed off about it, it's like it weighs 2,500 pounds. That's the equivalent of you going, you know, tapping somebody in the arm and be like, you got to get going. You know, not like he's out here hitting it with a fucking sledgehammer. You didn't crack it in the head with a shovel. You just punched it in the ass to get it moving. Survivors of the camp would later recall, during her trial for war crimes, that she often, that she seemed particularly excited about sending children to the gas chambers. Her other hobby, that would come up at, another point, that'd be a big point of contention, during the Nuremberg trials was, her interior decorating choices, where she had some books and some lampshades and some gloves that were all said to have been made of that sweet, soft gypsy and Jew skin. A lot of places have now said that they've tested them and said it was goat skin, but I mean, you look at pictures of concentration camps, you ever see goats running around? You know, not a lot of livestock in there.
Not necessarily, no.
You know, no. A lot of dead Jews and gypsies, though.
Uh-huh.
Why would we let that go to waste? They also recalled that that she often took her horseback riding lessons through the camp to scout out prisoners that had distinctive tattoos. And the prisoners would be very often, while they were still alive, they would have the tattoos stripped from them, and then they'd be incinerated. And allegedly, in big air quotes, because, you know, nobody that actually saw it in person actually wants to talk about it anymore, even if some of them are still alive, because it's probably fucking horrific. There were allegedly frames with human skin in them on the walls in their camp that they had there, their nice little house that they had. So these are, you know, recovered from, some of them were recovered from the camp after, and used as evidence in her trial. She and her husband were arrested August 24th, 1943. Whoa, shit, went too far. At Buchenwald on charges of embezzlement and murder of prisoners. Notice the order that those charges come in.
Well, I mean,
because it's one thing to kill people. It's a completely different thing to be stealing from the government.
You, how dare you?
And if there's one thing the government doesn't like, it's when you fuck with their money.
Exactly.
Look at Al Capone. How many hundreds of people did he order to have killed? And they couldn't touch him. But he fucking slipped up and doesn't do his taxes for, I don't know, a decade or whatever. And they're like, ah, gotcha, bitch. You know?
Well, they had to have some way because they couldn't actually link. They tried to link him as much as they could, but they could not.
Yeah, and that's the shitty part. Because, like, try to tell me they didn't have evidence against him.
Yeah.
You know? I don't even know what the fuck Wesley Snipes ever did to nobody. They got him for tax evasion. You know?
I don't know.
And that's why we had fucking Mike Epps in Major League 2. He was all right. I watched that the other night. he's not Willie Mays Hayes, but he was all right.
No.
You know? So despite the Nazis' mass murder of, you know, prisoners and their torture methods that they were used to, they hid as medical experiments. They didn't find the Koch's methods of torment suitable for the Nazi ideology. So they are so rotten in Nazis that even the Nazis again were like, we got to do something here. These guys are bad. So most of their punishments had to be cleared by the main office in Orenburg, and the Koch's were we didn't tell them to do this. They're playing by their own set of rules here. Also alleged that Commandant Koch, her husband, ordered the execution of the orderly who had diagnosed and treated him for syphilis to keep his diagnosis, you know, quiet.
True.
Because we don't need anybody to know that, you know, you've got the same disease that your boss has got. But Frau Koch here, in the meantime, she's starting to expand her repertoire when it comes to dude she's fucking at Buchenwald, and it's widely accepted that her and the commandant were kind of, they weren't necessarily like out looking for it, but if they found it on the side, they were kind of cool with it.
Uh-huh. You know,
it was fine. Thankfully, she had the decency to not fuck Joseph Mengele, unlike Irma Grease, which just makes her even worse. Like, that buck-toothed little fuck. So following the camp's liberation in 1945, word began to travel that Ilse here had some pretty strong involvement, as survivors recalled in their interviews, and the public pressured the court to bring her to trial again. Ilse Koch was... Koch? God damn, I keep calling her Koch. Cunt. She was brought before the General Military Government Court for the trial of war crimes in 1947, which is just the real long way of saying Nuremberg.
Yep.
She took the stand and announced that she was 8 months pregnant, which came as a shock to, you know, for a couple of reasons. First of all, she didn't have any contact with any men except for American interrogators. You know, most of those interrogators were Jewish.
Juden.
And that's because, not because they're like, we're going to stick her and make her talk to the Jews. No, it's because most of them were of, you know, German descent, and they could translate and, you know, speak the language.
Yeah.
And the other part that makes it a little skeptical, makes you a little skeptical that she's pregnant, is the fact that she's 41 years old. It's like, it's not, it can happen, you know?
It can happen.
Chances are a little slimmer than if she was 30, you know?
You could still be pregnant. You know, you haven't gone through menopause. You're still getting a period.
But the risk of birth defects after, I want to say it was like 30, 38 or 39, the risk of a birth defect or being born with some kind of other issues like that goes up like fucking skyrockets.
Still doesn't mean you can't. Correct. Still doesn't mean you can't get pregnant.
No, it does not. But, you know, anyway.
Those things don't, you know, I mean, hey.
So whether she was or wasn't pregnant, she was charged with, quote, participating in a criminal plan for aiding, abetting, and participating in the murders at Buchenwald, and sentenced to life in prison for, quote, violations of law and customs of war. She had one son with a commandant before she was arrested, and the second child, whose father is completely unknown, this is the one that she was pregnant with during the trial, was born while she was in prison, and both of her children went into foster homes. Mercifully. Because, like, I mean, that's probably the best thing for everybody involved.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
2 years after her conviction, her sentence was reduced to 4 years by General Lucius D. Clay, the interim military governor of the American zone in Germany, which would be West Germany.
Dickhead.
Fucking Lucius, man, what are you doing? Like,
you fucked up.
You really did.
There's a chant. You fucked up.
You fucked up. You fucked up. You fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch ECW. You'll hear it. You'll hear it a time or two.
You fucked up. You fucked up.
And then my favorite, my personal favorite wrestling chant that would work really well in this is anytime this man opened his mouth, it'd be, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So according to Clay, the reduction came, quote, since there was no convincing evidence that she had selected inmates for extermination in order to secure tattooed skin or that she possessed any articles made of human skin. Right. Fuck you. Fuck you, Lucius. What color is your hair? What color are your eyes? Where are your parents from? You from Pennsylvania, motherfucker?
Pennsylvania Dutch.
Let's talk. You son of a bitch. Oh, the Northwest? Like, oh, okay. Like those other guys that went back over there and fought too? You piece of shit. I've seen Band of Brothers. I know there was dudes from Oregon over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's still dudes in Oregon that are like, man, I wish I was there.
And there are some people from other places too.
Yeah.
Wasn't just Oregon. It was Midwest too. And no, but other places.
I mean, for the longest time, Oregon was like the fucking white supremacist capital of the country, though. Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe. Oregon and Washington, yeah. There was a bunch of them that were trying to make a white separatist state up there, and I'm like, dude, you guys could have picked somewhere way fucking better where it doesn't rain so much. You know,
I'll take rain over snow.
I'll take just not, you know, living with a bunch of fucking Nazis. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True.
I like seasoning on my food. We got to leave the blacks alone. We got to leave the Mexicans alone. We got to leave the Asians alone. Okay?
True.
Because if without them, all of our shit is fucking like paper plate bland. So let's not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the only whites that are like, they can cook, we don't really want to talk to, you know? Like the Italians and the French.
Whoa. What's wrong with Italians? It's because the French surrender all the time.
Mm-hmm. When was the last time the Italians were relevant during war? The Roman Empire. That's when.
It says they have to be relevant. They were relevant for like 2 minutes. They got fucking, yeah. You know.
They got their 15 minutes of fame in history.
They got fucking sort of brought in because, you know, their leaders were like, hey, you like to do this too. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. But one was like, I'm not as much of an asshole as you are. And then the other one was like, all right, so I'm going to fucking take your country by force.
Yeah. And then they hung him upside down, and then the Italians are like, okay, whoa, let's settle down here.
Yeah, relax.
You guys can go fuck yourselves. We're going to talk with these guys now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, we came in and face-fucked Fortress Europa, so you're welcome. Russians want to take all this credit, whatever. Good job. You guys were there for the last part of it. Yeah.
Fuck you guys.
Motherfuckers with no boots on. You know, one rifle amongst five guys. Fuck you. Just because you had a bunch of people, that doesn't mean shit.
Just because you held out in St. Petersburg or Stalingrad, whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, you did that one cool thing, you know.
You know, I mean, come on.
Way to go.
Just because they don't know what winners really like.
Yeah.
You know, if it was us, well, sorry.
Credit where it's due. It's between us and the English. I mean, and French girls. French teenage girls did a fucking number on the Nazis during World War II. So during her time in petition, she... During her time in prison, she petitioned for appeals several times, but was always dismissed. Oh, sad fiddle.
So what's... In petition, huh?
Yeah.
So how can you in petition?
She was petitioned into prison and I had a stroke just now. So she even protested to the International Human Rights Commission, which is fucking hilarious. The fact that she's talking to people that are in favor of human rights when she clearly was not.
No.
And that was also rejected because they're
kind of an oxymoron.
They had this big rubber stamp, and every time something with her name came across it, it just slam it down, and it's just in big red letters. Cunt.
Or they used the force because they didn't really open it. They're like, Ilsa. Boof. Denied.
Smells like bratwurst and war crimes. No, fuck her. So, after all of this shit that happens where she's in prison and she can't get out, so she's a sad boy.
Sad girl, not a boy.
No, fuck her. I don't care. September 1st, 1967, she committed suicide by hanging herself in prison.
Aww.
I can just hope to God that she didn't break her neck and she just, like, swung there for like 20-25 minutes, just slowly suffocating. Yeah, that'd be great. And then once in a while, like one of her cellmates picked her up so that she could breathe again and then just set her back down.
She didn't have a cellmate, so
I know,
it's
too bad.
No.
You
know she didn't.
So the next day, her oldest son, Yu, arrived to visit and was shocked to find out that his mother was dead. Because they never told him.
Aw, poor guy.
You know, she was buried in an unmarked, unattended grave at the prison cemetery.
Damn.
Yeah, fuck her. So, again, arguments. How many people can we really accredit to her? A lot. And the fact that she... I'm gonna use your own argument against you that
what?
You use with Klaus Barbie.
Okay.
Yes, I did some atrocious shit.
Okay.
But just like Fritz Haber... He didn't have a direct hand in it most of the time. Whereas Klaus Barbie and this bitch were hand-selecting people, looking them in the face and going, nah, get rid of it. You know? And she did that a lot. And she did that with fucking kids, sending kids to the gas chamber. You know?
Yeah.
Fucking Jew skin gloves.
Yeah.
She is a direct influence on Ed Gein. Because he read a bunch of books about the Nazis and all this shit that they were doing and making things out of human skin. And she has a direct effect on his brain, you know, which I didn't make that argument beforehand, but who cares? It's Ed Gein, you know, everybody fucking talks about Ed Gein.
Didn't really make a difference because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like pertinent to advance her because you know, she advanced, you know. Like, it was like, fucking, I was like the French and threw up their white flag.
You had the white flag going before I even started talking about her.
Yes, I did.
So, I mean, that would be my argument for why she should move ahead.
Okay. Okay.
You know?
Yeah, I mean.
Now, let's just, for shits and kicks here. Whoever wins this is going to be facing off against Nikolai Yezhov in the semis. So, this could be interesting either way. But I unfortunately stand with this bitch.
You know, this one is one of those ones where it's...
Now, if we had had Aidid versus Haber, we'd be fucking fist fighting each other over the table over who gets to go forward. If we had had her versus Klaus Barbie about who gets to go forward, again, we'd be rolling on the floor pulling each other's hair out.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. And you know, it's, yeah. Cause I mean,
did he do awful shit? He absolutely did do awful shit.
Well, did he enforce awful shit? Yes.
Correct.
She
did awful shit.
She didn't do it per se. She enforced it.
Yeah.
She
was a little bit more personal.
She made the choice.
Yeah.
Of, hey, let's do this. I mean, not saying that Aidid didn't by his order, because that's the same exact thing. They both gave orders.
But his orders were go defend this, go take this from them. This was, what's your fucking number? Okay, cool. Take him and run him through the can opener or whatever.
Hey, any supplies coming in for a little bit, take them.
Yeah.
Because our people are going to start, because, you know, fuck our people.
Yeah.
And then it was, hey, you know, fuck our people more because we're just going to shoot them.
Yep.
Because they're trying to take the supplies and everything else. And, oh, yeah, these other guys, fuck them, too. We'll kill them as well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's... God, I'm my assholeness is going more towards Ilsa.
Yeah.
Just because of the whole fact that she, you know, what she did to the people in the camps.
Yeah.
And then
more than one camp too.
Yeah. And in taking in, yeah, I'm just gonna say Ilsa.
Okay,
I'm gonna you know, I can't say that Aidid wasn't an asshole.
No,
you know,
he was a huge asshole. This was just a bad matchup for him.
Yeah,
this is like Duke versus fucking Crichton. you know, where it's like, this is the guy who you're like, that they're good, but this is the one where it's like, they might surprise you. You know what I mean?
Creighton definitely could do that.
Yeah.
They have done it. They are definitely like, not a piece of shit team.
She's UConn, and they're like, I don't know, like St. Mary's or something.
Yeah. You just ran into a fucking, you know.
You got like a powerhouse, and then you got the Cinderella story that might surprise you.
True. But I mean, it's kind of like, or you go to the finals now. You know, UConn and Purdue, two powerhouses, you know.
I don't know, to be honest.
They're two powerhouses. And
it's like, well, I don't follow basketball of any level for the most part.
And they're running into each other, but it's just more of a who did worse shit.
Yeah.
And for me, it kind of draws, I draw a line at the kids.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure kids were being starved to death in Somalia, too.
I'm pretty sure that it wasn't just, you know, women and children. Women and men. And
no.
It was children, too. I mean, because, like I said, you know, there was children emaciated and all that good stuff. But,
yeah. But also, he did it by fucking subterfuge and lying.
Yeah.
She didn't. Like, you went in there and you knew what you were going to get with her.
Yeah.
Where he had to make up the whole bullshit to get everything started for the most part.
Yeah.
You know? True.
I mean, he had to overthrow a guy and then, you know, go, okay, well, I got this power struggle with this other guy. So we got to take as much supplies as we can to supply our guys.
Where's this? Where's fucking she had government backing on the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, yeah.
I think we're going to be hard-pressed to find anybody worse than Nazis for the most part.
Yeah. You know? All right. Yeah. So we'll go with Ilsa.
All right. So she's going to move forward again to face off with, who did we just say? Nikolai Yezhov, which, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yep.
And the sad part is like, if these two weren't of such different ideologies, they'd have been fucking at one of his parties, you know. But, you know, Nazis and fascists really don't, you know, I'm sorry, Nazis and communists don't really mix real well.
So next
he just slipped a Mickey to her. And
yeah,
so the next episode we've got General Butt Naked
and
versus Klaus fucking Barbie.
I don't know nothing about.
Maybe we can pull a Dark Horse victory out of this. Who knows? We'll see.
I don't know.
We'll see. Because, like, Klaus Barbie, we know he was a piece of shit.
Oh, he was a fucking, a real asshole.
But General Butt Naked is, like, out of his goddamn mind, a piece of shit, and still alive as far as I know.
Who?
General Butt Naked.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we'll get to that. But yeah. Kevin.
Yeah. So, you know.
Headphones and stuff.
Studio, go check them out. Studio.com. Check them out. Find what you want. Put in your basket. Promo code of DarkWindows15 to get 15% off your entire purchase. Also, you know, find us on Instagram, DarkWindowsPod. We're on Facebook, DarkWindowsPodcast. Hit us up on there. You know, he's Kevin Carlton. I'm Kevin Heyer.
On Instagram, I'm Kevin_sucks@stuff. So,
I don't remember what I am on Instagram, to be honest.
Yep.
Rate,
review, and subscribe.
Yeah, where you can.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully you don't get drafted, I guess. You know, if you're hearing this in the past, like, good luck, I guess.
Have fun.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time. Just because you can't see out in the dark doesn't mean the dark can't see into you.
Bye. We'll be right back.